Hi, this is Doug Gray of the Marshall Tucker Band. Always keep your eyes open for motorcycles. This message is brought to you by my buddies at Long Island Abate.
The following radio show is live, except for the announcement you're hearing right now.
Welcome back to Your Island Live with your host, Tom Shillero, on 103.9 LI News Radio.
And once again, welcome back as we're cruising along on our middle of the week special. Now, this segment of our program is being brought to you by the CSEA, the Civil Service Employees Association. They are New York's leading public service union. People working together to make New York a better place for all of us. CSEA represents 265,000 workers in New York State. 48,000 of them can be found right here on Long Island. They are your bus drivers, groundskeepers, and clerical staff. They plow and pave your streets, clean your office buildings. They provide child care for the mentally and physically disabled. From Buffalo to Brookhaven, CSEA members work hard for all of us. They never quit serving our communities and fighting for the working folks. Nick Lamont, president. Now, this segment, if you remember yesterday, we were talking a little bit about making Long Island affordable again. We talked a little bit about that. So I ran across a gentleman. His name is Rich Murdocco. Rich is the founder of Foggiest Idea. And very interesting. He's going to tell us a little bit about it and how it relates to maybe some better planning, maybe better ways in which we can meet our goal, as we were talking about yesterday, is trying to make the less people leaving Long Island with maybe a little bit more planning. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hey now, Tom, how are you?
Doing great. You know, you and I spoke a little bit today, and I was getting some idea on what you folks do. And the way I thought about it is this could work. I mean, it can work in such a way is to better plan. And so I'm going to start with you're the founder of Foggiest Idea. Give us an idea, because right now I don't have the foggiest idea. And I want to learn a little bit more about it.
So essentially what the Foggiest Idea is, it's a website. It's thefoggiestidea.org. And what I do is I collect and archive all of my published work on real estate development trends. Mm. So that includes housing, transportation, and environmental issues. I have my master's degree in public policy from Stony Brook University, and I've made it my mission to put my education to work to educate Long Islanders and people throughout the New York metro region on the land use issues that impact their communities.
You know, the idea of land use, I mean, yeah, it almost seems like somebody wants to build a shopping center. Okay, so right away they have public hearings and they start bringing up the fact that we've got shopping centers up the road from the one that they want to build a new shopping center. And the one up the road has got half the retail stores empty. How do you deal with a problem like that? Some developer wants to build this, and yet the folks who live in the area don't want it because there's too many empty stores and they'd rather see something like that. It almost seems like what you do, you kind of have to study that.
Yes, and really what I argue for in my work is that you have to look at development cohesively. Mm. On the local level, development impacts traffic. It could impact property taxes. But on the cohesive level, you have to begin to understand the interaction between these commercial and residential developments. And that's where planning comes in. Planning can be sourced from the community or it could be from the regional level. I like to say it's regional planning with an understanding of localized impacts. And that's really what I advocate for. It's a data-driven analysis and assessment of development trends on the island.
Now, many times, and I've attended many of these public hearings on a development project, and they'll bring in the so-called experts who will say why this is a great idea. And the opposition comes with the same types of experts, only from a different company, and say why it's a bad idea. And I hear you laughing a little bit, but you know, how do we reconcile the two?
Well, really, what you have to look at is planning best practices. And oftentimes, in the discussion about development issues, it is driven by industry stakeholders or people with a dog in a fight. Mm. That's why my work has resonated across the region, really, because people read it and they go, oh, sometimes he's for development, then I get hate mail. Oh, sometimes he's against development. And I get hate mail. But what it's really looking at is best practices as dictated by urban planning standards.
Well, I like it. I mean, I like that whole concept because you're trying to take an approach that's somewhat pragmatic, but at least it's neutral right down the line, fair and balanced, so to speak. And I think that's a proper way, because what's good, I've always said this, what's good for one neighborhood may not be good for another neighborhood.
Exactly. So what you hear about, and I call it, it's almost a blanket approach, is, oh, well, this worked in, say, Patchogue. It's going to work in Yaphank. And that's where a planner worth their salt will come in and say, well, not exactly. Patchogue has the access. It has the demand. Yaphank, not so much in those examples. You need to look at and take inventory of what each neighborhood and community has, look at its assets, look at its deficiencies, say, okay, well, you guys don't have a gas station. Maybe you need one. Stuff like that.
And that's, again, a pragmatic approach. I mean, I've had developers on this program that essentially look at every piece of land and say, why isn't it developed? And then you have civic associations or environmental groups that can't imagine any development going on. So, I mean, it's a tough problem that we have here on Long Island, because you have
the picture being in the middle of it.
Yeah, exactly. No, I that's why I'm raising this issue with you, because you don't take a side. You, and I like that whole factor there of data driven analysis. I like that.
And really, planning is about balance. So what planners strive to do is they're trying to balance the economic needs of a community. They're trying to balance the social needs of a community. And then on top of it, and this is the most important on Long Island, the environmental needs of the community. And oftentimes when you have a civic group who's very ground, they're very dug in to saying, we don't want growth, well, economically you may need it. Or if you have a developer saying, well, we're going to build until everything's paved over, what about the social ramifications or the environmental impacts?
And do you find, though, there's cooperation? I'm sure you've been in the middle of these fights. Do you find that maybe the developers or the environmentalists or the good civic associations, do you find they're willing to sit down, or is it the type of job of what you do and it just makes you crazy?
It depends on how the project is first birthed. So if a developer comes in and they engage the civics early on, the discourse can be very civil. It can be very pleasant. And then you have successes, such as there's a couple projects that are moving ahead that the developer approached the municipality and the town. They sat down in Syosset, there's an example, in Nassau County, where the civic group pushed fiercely against a mall. The developer tried ramming that mall down through the approval process. It failed. Then a new developer came in and said, okay, let's sit down. What do you guys want? And then there's other examples where developers come in and they kind of push, they throw their weight around, they're spending money. And then at that point, everyone's so dug into their ideological pigeonholes, they're not willing to work together. It's all or nothing. And that's when the process is lost.
Now, would you bring them together? Is that part of what you would do?
I do that through my analysis.
Through
and
analysis.
My readership is of my stuff on the foggiestidea.org, the readership really is, it is civic leaders, developers, elected officials. And what it says is, hey guys, time out. Let's look at this project for what it's worth. And then from there, if that provokes a conversation, even better.
You know, again, I like the concept because this is almost an age-old problem here on Long Island, because we have a very vibrant community, economic community in Nassau and Suffolk County. So there's always going to be both sides to it. At the same time, we have to protect the environment, as we're speaking. At the other time, we have to allow for some sort of economic growth. Is there any, in your studies, in your writings, looking at economic growth and see where we're heading, where we've been? Because you can't ignore that, because economic growth means jobs.
And a lot of times what we have is we have people from outside the region come in and say, oh, well, why don't you just build more apartments? Well, if that was the answer, it would have been done already. It's much more complex and nuanced on Long Island because of where we get our drinking water from, the sole source aquifer.
Exactly,
and every land usage we put on top of that impacts the quality of our drinking water. That's why the need for sound planning comes to the forefront of these developmental decisions. In the past, our development, we were able to build on acres upon acres of potato fields and put these 1,000-unit subdivisions of single-family homes. Today, we're on an island. There's no more open space like that. So now we have to concentrate growth on revitalization and concentrating it around train stations and other transit nodes that will interconnect to the region.
You know, again, I'm listening to this, and I'm somewhat fascinated because I haven't heard of at least an organization like yours at least bringing this out to try to put some common sense to this. Because again, as I said before, there are developers that can't imagine a tree existing anymore, and on the other hand, there's environmentalists that don't want anything, ignoring the fact that we derive an economic benefit from these type of projects. So we need to bring that together. One of the problems that we've talked about on this program is affordable housing for our young people. And if you, and I'm sure you know better than I do, if you compare rents just for our millennials, those young folks getting out of college who want to stay here, and now under a new proposal on tuition assistance, they're obligated to stay here coming out of a state school. But where are they going to live and not pay rents of $1,600, $1,700, $1,800 a month?
Well, this is where it becomes a thorny issue, because you involve government subsidies for housing and everything else. Mm. In general, what is going on is you will have a couple, Rebecca and Grayson, say, yes, they want to move into an area like Mineola, where they can take the train to work and everything, and then they see the rent, it's $3,000 a month.
Yeah, I saw that complex over there. Yes.
The developer will say, oh, but you can live-work. You can work underneath the apartment, but then you look, it's a retail use. They're going to be making minimum wage. There's a disconnect between what is being offered, what is being built, and what the region truly needs.
Mm.
Now, it's a very thorny issue, because on Long Island, you bring up the A word, affordability, it becomes a thing, as we like to say, and the hearings become very contentious. It, yes, becomes very tinged with undertones and a lot of different aspects that paint this into a much more complex issue than it really has to be. But what it boils down to, really, is that we need to start looking at housing in a more cohesive manner. And it's not just the millennials. It's not just Rebecca and Grayson who are starting out. Mm-hmm. It's older people, younger people,
that's right, yeah,
everything. And when you do it from a cohesive regional level, it's a little bit easier to understand where we've been in terms of housing stock and where we should be headed. And I've seen some progress on that front. Institutions like the Long Island Index have made it their mission to basically chart out affordability and the challenges presented to that. But now we're in the point where we need solutions.
Exactly. And, you know, again, it almost seems like what you do in the preparation of some of these data-driven analysis, that there's some answers there. I'm going to make that assumption without knowing too much about your company. At least you're proposing some answers, you know, to some
of
these.
Well, what I'm proposing is more of a discourse and information about it. I actually go to regional libraries across Suffolk and Nassau counties. I'm coming to Longwood on October 17th to discuss the transformation of suburbia. I'll be in Patchogue, Medford, to talk about the issues of development related to the village of Patchogue and everything else. And what I believe in is putting good information out there, and that's how you begin the genesis of sound policy making.
Now, is government involved with you guys at all? Because it seems like whenever elected officials get their information, it's usually through staffers doing I don't know what type of research, and they'll actually then pronounce what they've learned from their staff on a particular issue, whether it's a development project or a housing project or something having to do with the infrastructure. But I sometimes question whether they have the expertise to do that.
Sometimes they do. It depends on the municipality. Each municipality does have a pool of resources, of knowledge, in the form of their departments where they can tap that information. I talk to elected officials regularly. I speak to civic leaders regularly, journalists, editors, and I basically say, hey, this is my take on the development issue. Do with it what you want.
Now, where would people who are listening right now, where would they find out more about, you know, the obviously your organization, Foggiest Idea? You have a website, you have Facebook.
Yes. So I am on Facebook. You can look at the Foggiest Idea page. I'm on Twitter at the Foggiest Idea. And then for the centralized location with a complete archive of my published work that it's appeared in Newsday, Long Island Business News, Long Island Press, The Real Deal, Cranes. That is www.thefoggiestidea.com.
You know, interesting. Is there anybody else out there doing this? Because I have to say, this is the first, when you approached us, this was really the first I heard of it.
Not that I know of. Not coming from a strictly planning-centric approach. There are plenty of stakeholder groups, nonprofits, that look at development issues, but you have to basically follow the money, see who's on the board and see what paints their approach to development.
You know, again, we just had something contentious here over there in the Tri-Hamlet in the Mastic Beach area about doing something about the railroad crossing. And I know there were a lot of folks unhappy because the studies were in all different directions on how to best move the traffic down William Floyd Parkway because they still have the old style crossing right there. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people that live there right now. I mean, it would tell you right away that something has to be done. But the Long Island Railroad or the MTA, they basically said everything's fine.
You know, so. Well, it depends on their perspective. For them, it probably is because their trains are moving back and forth with little or no problem, and then the residents are waiting while the gates are down. Really, the solution there would be a great crossing, but then it brings up who's going to pay for it, where is it going to come from.
Right, exactly. And you run up across that also when it comes down to the dollars and cents issue.
Yeah.
When we do that. You know, once again, I'll tell you, Rich Murdocco, founder of Foggy's Idea. Rich, fascinating conversation. I have to say I learned something today, and I think we need more of this, you know, to try to present, fair and balanced to some of these controversial issues that are out there.
Thank you so much, Tom, for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, when we get back from our break, we're going to take up some of this. People are talking about this UN speech that had happened yesterday and some of the words that were spoken by the president. I have Rich Crist, a Republican strategist, calling on. We'll be talking about that. Now, in the minutes that we have left here, I just want to give an update. It looks like, when it comes to these, it's almost like it's almost 2 weeks. This is our third week now of talking about hurricanes. You know, we started with Hurricane Harvey and we put out the number there where people can donate and help out the folks down there in Texas and how much devastation. Then we talked about Irma, which basically just went all over the state of Florida. Still people there, particularly the Keys that many of us had vacationed at or been there, and the devastation that's there. Now there's Maria. All of this. In less than, I'm going to count the days, in less than 14 days. And as we speak, Maria is now lashing up against Puerto Rico, which is a, U.S. possession, obviously. The citizens of Puerto Rico are citizens of the United States, and they are getting hit. There's some word now that electricity in that beleaguered area is... may not be back on. I mean, they're giving the numbers a month, 2 months, 3 months, even before water's restored. Or it's almost hard to say that in the year 2017 that areas like this can be without water and electricity, all due to these storms that are hitting there. So as bad as Harvey was and as bad as Irma was, well, Maria is really bad. I mean, it's to the point like we're almost immune to it in terms of our discussion about it because we're hurricane played out right now to a certain extent. But this is really, put us out there in terms of talking about that. So we're going to keep an eye on that, as time goes on. In the meantime, Jose, looks like it kind of like skirted off of us. We got some rain last night. Winds, I think, didn't go more than 20, 25 miles an hour. So that helped us out. And there doesn't seem to be that much from what I hear down by the Smith Point area, that much beach erosion as far as that's concerned. Now, again, when we get back, we're going to talk about the world reaction to the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, and what he had to say, and that many leaders were somewhat in shock. They had trouble getting up out of their seats after they heard this. They were just sitting there kind of like stone-faced that they didn't know how to take it. Supporters of the speech obviously would be Israel, Russia, China. They were all good things were said about them by the president, that they are doing their part to stop this madman in North Korea, as Donald Trump called him, the rocket man, which, again, had a whole different perspective on how Donald Trump approaches the global view of what's happening in this world. Obviously, Israel, very happy that he said that he was going to at least relook at the Iran nuclear deal, if not tear that up. One thing, Israel was very, very opposed when the United States allowed certain concessions to be made to Iran and develop of their nuclear program, in addition to the fact that we're dealing with a nuclear North Korea and the way in which that's going to go. So there was some very, very important, extremely high security statements that were made to the world yesterday by the president. I think a lot of people don't realize the power of the American presidency beyond belief, that when the president speaks, everybody listens. That whole concept of leader of the free world, whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't matter. It's true. You are the leader of the free world when you're president of the United States. We're going to take a short break. I'm your host, Tom Shalero, on this middle of the week special. Here on Your Island on 103.9 LI News Radio. Take a short break. We'll be taking some phone calls. We're going to listen to Rich Christ, and then we'll take some phone calls.